Folks, today's episode is brought to you by SiriusXM Satellite Radio. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood. That's where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood. It's where you get news from every source. It's where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, woo! In addition to Jam On, The Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more. It's where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix Is a Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN and more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now and listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home. And get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/amigos, A-M-I-G-O-S, to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. That's SiriusXM, no car required. What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In The Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. What's up? Welcome back to another episode of Amigos. This is your host, Mike Fenoya. Hope everybody's doing great. I've got a fun guest with me today. Before that, let's get the business out of the way. At Mike Fenoya, at Amigos Pod on social media, the Amigos Podcast discussion group on Facebook. This weekend, I'll be headlining Governor's Comedy Club. No, the Brokerage Comedy Club on Long Island. It's one of the Governor's Clubs. Go to govs.com for tickets.
Pretty close.
That's the voice of my buddy.
You got to finish the plugs, though. Finish your plugs.
I think that's it. MikeFenoya.com for dates.
Govs.com.
Govs.com.
Follow Amigos. That's A-M-I-G-O-S.
P-O-D. Nice job. Way to almost help. That's Brent. That's my buddy Brent Gill. What's up,
Fenoya? Nice to How see are you, buddy? Good to that's see a you real as well. Handshake. Thank you for having me.
Dude, you know, every time I see you, it's like... I feel like you and I have known each other for a million years, but we only just met.
God,
like
had to be
three or four years ago.
Yeah, because yeah. was it with Big J that we met?
I believe we met when I first came to Denver to do Comedy Works opening for Jay, and then like a month or two later, I came back
to headline.
To headline,
and I worked with you then.
Yeah, and it was fast friends right away.
Dude, it's great.
Yeah,
it's really random. It's fun to find those people where all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, we're gonna be friends forever now.
Totally.
Even though we've met each other twice, we're like, fuck yeah, let's go to a concert series together.
I know, dude. It's pretty wild.
You went to Fish, though, didn't you?
Just recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I came in
That's why I saw you in Denver.
Nope. You saw me. I saw you outside of Comedy Works, the bar across the street.
Yeah, Roosevelt's. Front Porch. They're right next to
each other. Which, by the way, I'd like to shout that place out because Front Porch, when I lived there, and I don't know if they still do this, but when I lived in Denver, if it was your name,
yep,
you drank free.
Yep.
What a great concept. They still do that.
Yeah, dude.
If you're going to open a bar and you want to separate yourself from the pack,
yeah,
and you throw a grift like that where it's like, if it's your name, and it was always a dude's name
and like two chicks.
Yeah. So then, you know how many people probably got laid when it was like, oh, it's your name day too?
We used to do like
a Taylor and an Ashley show up at the right day.
Holy shit. I didn't know. The staff at the comedy club used to like hit them up and be like, hey, here's a little name recommendation for you.
Oh, really?
And then we would go over there with one of our people.
Oh, that's
kick
ass.
We get obliterated there anyway because they hook us up because we're right across the street.
But. So I was running around Denver doing, I headlined a couple nights and then I did some bar shows.
Yeah.
Incredible comedy scene in Denver, which we should talk about. But I'm eating, it's kind of funny. I was trying to sneak...
The food truck, yes!
I was trying to sneak a couple late-night fat guy slices of pizza And there you are, fucking ear to ear grin, definitely
ready to embrace
drunk.
It. Yeah.
You're like, brother. And I'm shoving pepperoni pizza boiling hot.
Yeah.
Actually, decent slices out of a truck.
Not terrible. And that truck's not normally there either.
I heard that.
And I was like, where the fuck did this come from? And then you were there, and I was like, this makes sense. Maybe
I legitimately,
you called ahead.
Yeah, like when a New York guy's in Denver, pizza truck somehow, it's like I have a GP. I'm like the Jason Bourne for pizza trucks. I just have a beacon in my wrist. I'll tell you what. It's what I needed. I was just recently out there. I did Fish, and then I did Tuesday night at Comedy Works down south, which was a surprisingly amazing.
Tuesday in the South.
It was amazing turnout.
People complain or think that the South Club would be. So for those of you who don't know, the Comedy
Works
South.
Let's explain Denver comedy.
Yeah,
there.
There's two different. There's three clubs, but there's. Yep, there's three clubs. I don't want to be
clubs.
Counted out from any of them. There's one in Stapleton, which
that's
is a little
improv.
Bit outside, which is the Improv.
Which is good room,
great room. It's an A club, but it's a different genre than what...
I think that what happens in certain cities is that you've got... So the Improv and the Funny Bone is the chain of American comedy clubs.
Yeah, it's like Yuck Yucks in Canada for your Canadian
listeners.
Where
you can essentially find them in a mall. You could find them...
in a mall next to the airport,
next to an airport. Yeah, always like you know, like the one in Columbus, which is the flagship.
God, that one's
room
dope.
Is like in an outdoor open air mall situation where you can walk from like a Cheesecake Factory to the world's biggest DSW, to like a VR, like
to that massive movie theater
to
that's
the giant,
right by
76 seat movie theater where like
nuts.
Smoke comes out of the seats, and then the comedy club, and that's exactly where. Last time I did the Improv, the place across the street was called, I Love This Bar and Grill. Like,
oh,
whatever.
Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill, which, by the way, which took the place of a Barnes & Noble. And if that's not as America as it gets, it's like,
totally...
fuck these books. Let's put a bar in here.
Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill. When I saw the name of that place, I remember because I was standing outside and I'm like looking at it and I'm like, that doesn't actually say what it says. And it totally did.
And
I
you
mean,
go
that's...
in there and it was fucking massive too.
Oh, God,
and very depressing. It was very depressing.
That might as well be Jimmy Buffett's Cheeseburger in Paradise. I mean, really. When you, it's kind of funny too, because like I went to Jamaica and there were a couple of places that were super like parrot head type, like places where it was like the Buffalo Soldier burger and like stuff like, and it's like, come on, like at least leave Marley alone.
No,
you know?
They just want to capitalize on all the money
everything.
They can get.
So there's the Improv and then there's Comedy Works, which
downtown. So there's two clubs,
two rooms.
Yep. There's the downtown club, which has been there for 38 years. And then there's the South Club, which has been there for like 11 or 12.
Right.
Probably 11.
Yeah.
And the downtown one is literally downtown, 15th and Larimer. South Club is only 11 miles away, but it is like a suburb club.
It's where all of the hipsters that made it now live.
Yep. That have like 2-year-old, 3-year-old kids, don't want to raise them in the city, but still work in the city.
Yeah. It's where project managers whose project that they were managing took off.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's a corporation. It's a beautiful area. It's the club is top notch.
Yeah.
It's
gorgeous.
You know, all of the staffs at all the clubs, Improv and Comedy Works, are phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think it's just because Denver is
it's
phenomenal.
A good city. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like what I've always thought is Denver is an island in the middle of the fucking country.
Yeah.
Where it's an 8-hour drive to any cool city.
Right.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
In any direction. If you want to get to Salt Lake, it's 8 hours. If you want to get to Omaha, it's 8. And I'm being loose with cool city.
Yeah, you are.
So, but...
Where, are you from Denver originally?
My dad was in the Air Force, but I've spent probably, of my 34 years of life, probably 27 of them in Colorado.
Wow.
Yeah.
Colorado Springs.
So I grew up in the Springs in Monument, which is north of the Springs.
Yeah.
And then I went to high school there, middle school, high school there. Before that, we were in Georgia for a little bit. And before that, we were in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, so we came back when I was in seventh grade. And then I went high school, college, or middle school, high school, college, college was in Boulder, mm-hmm. and then I moved to Denver in 2008, and I was there until I moved to LA in 2017.
You went to UC Boulder?
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
Dude, best weed in the game up there back when I was doing it. Worst football team in the game when I was in school there. God, they were so bad.
Dude.
We were only good when, no, I can't say that because it's 2019, but it... When we were doing illegal shit is the only time that we were a good football team.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much most, most situations. Teams were, yeah. Now, what years were you in college there?
So I was there 04 to 08, 4 years in and out.
Okay, so when I lived, I lived in Denver. Okay. I grew up here in the East Coast, and then I moved to Denver in 2007 and 8, 6, 7, 8. Something like
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah.
So I was living in downtown Denver when you were...
Were you doing comedy then?
No.
Okay, gotcha.
No, it was right before I started.
Gotcha.
And I was writing a ton.
Okay.
But I wasn't... It's interesting. Prior to doing stand-up, I wrote... Like, in college, I wrote a lot of plays. And it
wouldn't
was just...
Have seen, I wouldn't have pegged you for a play guy.
No.
I really wouldn't have.
You know what it was?
You were sad.
Yeah.
And emotional.
I thought I was Jack Kerouac. I was drunk a lot and
okay.
smoking cigarettes through a thing.
Okay.
No, I'm joking. I wasn't doing that. No, but I had to take a play. You know what? I needed – I was an English major.
Okay.
And I wanted to write, and I didn't want to read. So I just took as That's many fair. Writing courses as I possibly could.
Yeah.
And one of them was playwriting. And in order to like do playwriting, you had to read plays. And the thing I liked right. about reading plays was that it trimmed the fat. It was all dialogue. There was no narration. It was just dialogue. So if you read a play, it's character one says this, character two says this, character one says this. And it's like you rip through and you can use your imagination to kind of like create the setting, create the scene. That I really liked. So in the projects
Which
that
is what
I had,
you're doing with jokes. You're
exactly,
creating the scene.
Exactly.
And the, okay.
So what I did was there were plays that I had to kind of like, you know, write for projects.
Right.
And I wrote one. For a stand-up comic that was kind of just like a guy. I always liked the meta thing of like a guy writing about a guy writing jokes.
Sure.
Or like a kid writing about a children's book or
right,
whatever. Like
right.
I always tried to take it that level deeper. And it was fun to do that. And I ended up like writing a couple of pretty neat like things that I got to put on with the – I took directing courses.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And like producing courses and stuff
so you,
like that.
So you directed your own plays?
Yeah, one.
Wow. It,
with like a, with the kids in the class, like we kind of all did our own.
Yeah.
But it was pretty neat to be able to be like, okay, you're Vincent Van Gogh. I wrote a play called Wormwood, and it was about absinthe.
Okay.
And it was about Vincent Van Gogh, Ernest Hemingway, and Paul Gauguin. I think I'm saying that right.
Okay.
I never know how to say
I
people's
can't
names.
You.
Yeah, we're both fucking.
The ding- first two I heard.
This
of.
Looks like two. We look like two defensive linemen talking literature right
talking
now
about plays.
Yeah. But, like, those are three famous artists and authors and whatever that were, like, heavy drinkers of absinthe.
Okay.
Which, you know what absinthe
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's like that, the hallucinogenic
right.
liquor.
So, basically, my play takes place, like, in Van Gogh's studio the morning after, like, an absinthe bender. So, they wake up, like, hungover as fuck. And Van Gogh, the first line is, fuck! And he's, like, holding his head and his ears missing.
Oh, that's great.
But he, like, put it under a table leg because they were playing poker and the table,
and it was
you know.
Wobbly.
Yeah, so he was like, I got this. And he cut his ear off and jammed it under a table leg.
That's
which I
a
thought
start.
Was pretty neat.
That's a pretty fun start.
Yeah, so I was writing kind of, like, comedic, whatever, kind of weird shit. So then, but when
Did
I lived,
the class like it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah, but
because
was,
of the class, I was like, what the fuck is he
but
doing?
You know what it was, dude? You know what's interesting? And I don't know if I'm guessing by the size of your calves that you're not an improv guy.
Definitely not.
I don't mean that
For
again.
Sure not. I took an improv class in Denver.
Rob Riggle's an improv guy, and he can kick the fuck out of both of us, but it's just funny to...
yeah.
I'm joking, but...
my teacher always shit on comedy. He always was like, you know, stand-up comedy's good, but... And
but.
Then he would throw in some bullshit reasons why improv is better. And I was like, this is dumb.
I was just having a conversation with another comic in New York here about improv and about how I had to do it once or twice. Writing for the Jokers, Impractical Jokers.
You gotta do it, yeah.
Well, no, the guys that... other producers on the show come from, like, that UCB world.
Gotcha.
And we would have a show every now and then called Staff Infection. And it was the crew of the show that
yeah.
did improv and then some stand-up. And they were like, come on, try improv. And I was so fucking scared, dude. Like,
how weird is that? You have five other folks to lean on, and you're still more nervous than being up there totally alone.
Talking about the worst things in my life.
Yes!
I'm fine with
it. It's so weird. And that's why, dude, people get so weird. Like, I don't know how you do it. And I'm like, well, it's second nature to me. I don't know how you do blank. Like,
exactly. Dude, there's a place in that, it was the hardest thing ever. And I had to act like someone chasing... Like a villain in an old movie or something.
God,
I
you got to commit
like,
hard to
I
go, that.
I can't do this. Like, it was really, I felt so uncomfortable. However, I think now I would like to take a class because there are bits that I think could be, if the bit is a 7 in my mind, I think if I knew how to be more physical, I could bring that bit to a 10.
Right.
Or even an 8. Right. Like, just a little bit better than it is now. I can't. There's certain things like I can't act out. I've been trying to act out a guy with a drunk guy playing darts, like just a quick 2 second.
Oh, that sounds
thing
like fun
on stage, just to embellish a bit, and like just give a quick little act out to kind of drive my point home.
Yeah, and you're not doing it,
dude. I feel like the fucking Tin Man. Like,
really?
I feel like I need to be oiled. I've talked to Greer Barnes, is one of like my,
yeah.
I love him. I think he's one of the greatest fucking
comics. In New York. He's a staple here.
I mean, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think he's
brilliant, period.
He's the George Clinton of comedy, I feel like. He's like Parliament Funkadelic.
Yeah.
He gets up there, he's like doing kung fu and shit.
Right.
And I asked him, because he's very animated on stage, and I'm like, I told him about the bit, and he was like, yeah. He's like, you can almost see him visualizing how to do it, and he was talking to me about how to do it, and I'm like,
it's going over my head.
I was trying. You know what? You ever like try to listen to someone, but all you hear is listen to this person, listen to this person.
Yes.
Like, you don't actually, yes. You just hear yourself saying listen.
It's like, what's your name? Pay attention. Fuck, what was your name? God damn it.
I feel like that's my whole childhood.
I would say look at Bill Burr.
Oh, yeah.
On that. Because one thing, I've watched Bill Burr forever and ever.
Uh-huh.
And as Bill got into theaters, he became way more animated. His act outs were so much bigger and longer, mostly because you're doing a show in front of 5,000 people and you're tiny.
You need to be big.
You need to be big. So I mean, I'm sure he fucking hated it too. Bill Burr, you think he's an act out improv
guy? Lean on the mic stand.
Yeah.
Point, yell.
That's his shtick. So
I it's funny you bring that up, because that in that same conversation about improv, I guess he recently said each year he tries to learn something different,
yeah,
that makes his set bigger. And that black and white special that he did. A
lot of act outs.
When he's doing the curling bit about religion, where,
yeah,
he just lets go. Amazing.
That was the punchline.
That's the greatest,
yeah,
thing. Yeah, just doing that.
Silent,
and that's something,
yeah,
that is so, it's beautiful. It's,
yeah,
art.
Yeah.
So, improv and all that stuff. Impulse Theater in Denver that used to be in the basement of Wing Coop,
yep,
Brewery.
Yep.
I went to see that on a date once, and that to me was like the most, they were brilliant. They were absolutely, I don't know if you remember.
I remember
them.
Impulse. It was owned by, or it was in the, Wing Coop was owned by Governor Hickenlooper.
Oh, really?
Uh huh. Which is shady.
No shit.
Yeah.
Why is it shady?
I mean, if the governor's going to own a brewery and massive bar, like,
oh, yeah,
it just kind of seems a little conflicting interest.
Sure.
Like, and then say no to cannabis. Because he for sure was not for cannabis.
No shit.
Absolutely not.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely not.
But then when it came on board, did he change his tune?
He had no choice, really, because we voted it.
Now, I heard that, and you'd know this because you live in the land of the Hinkenlooper, which sounds like you're a character in a Seuss book. You, I thought he so is he Democrat or Republican?
I think he's Republican.
He was. Huh. So I thought he and maybe a Democrat from another country, another state, we're going to run as like a co-bill for president and like do like,
oh, wow,
a split, like a Democrat and a Republican.
Idea.
Yeah. So like either Republican president, Democrat vice president,
right,
or vice versa. And I think the guy was maybe from like Indiana or something like that. But I don't know if it's happened. I mean,
I feel like that's
now
a good idea on paper.
Yeah.
But
it'll
like
never,
in theory, like when you get elected, they're not going to see it.
No.
Like, how could they see eye to
no
eye?
And the minute you're elected, it doesn't matter what party
zero
you are. It doesn't matter.
Zero.
Not one bit. So your football team, you're right, they stunk when you were there, because I went to a bunch of games.
Awful.
And I learned,
I went to games. I never saw one. I was blacked out.
Blackout
time.
Drunk.
So drunk.
I wonder what's fucked up about Colorado. And it reminds me, because I learned this driving to Boulder to go to Folsom Field to see the
Dead & Co.
No, to see Texas beat the fuck out of the Buffaloes.
Oh, yeah.
This is a long, Dead & Co., yeah. Oh, but, I mean, there's 3-2 beer?
There used to be.
So explain that.
Recently,
to,
yeah. So
what the fuck is wrong with that state?
This is an old school thing. So Colorado used to be blue on Sunday. So you couldn't buy alcohol.
Blue means dry.
Dry on Sunday.
Dry Sundays.
I'm pretty sure it's blue, but you couldn't buy any alcohol on Sunday. And then we had 3-2 beers. So any beer sold in gas stations and grocery stores.
3.2%.
Maximum 3.2% alcohol. If you go to a city park, the maximum alcohol content in your beer can only be 3.2.
So if you're drinking a beer that was a gas station, watered down, fucking
40.
Like training wheel beer.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get a ticket.
Correct.
But if it was a Odell's or a fucking Dale's Pale Ale.
Yeah.
You're getting a ticket.
Correct.
For public intoxication.
They would have to prove that it wasn't 3.2, but yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Dude, look at now mushrooms are legal.
I know, right?
What the fuck?
Right? It's fucking nuts.
I know. Well, you know, scooters got introduced to Denver, and then I was like, well, the only thing next is mushrooms, because what you need...
We already got the weed.
You need a unicorn to ride when you're fucking tripping, so it's fucking hilarious.
It's nuts out there.
Do you love living... I mean, it's the great... You love that city? You call it home? You're sick of it? You kind of...
So I loved it. Past tense.
Yeah.
I really did. And it did a lot for me. And I may go back, but I'm very happy in LA, and I'm very happy going back as often as I do to visit.
Yeah.
Because it's not my scene anymore.
You say that, what do you mean?
So like I have my show in Boulder, which, you know, is, it's weird to say, but it's the best show in the state. Weekly show for sure. I'd say the Grolix is probably one of the best monthly shows. And then I have Comedy Works. So I'll go back and I'll go do my show and I'll go do sets at Comedy Works. But the scene there, all of my friends have left.
Yeah.
All of my friends are in LA or New York. Most of them are in LA.
It's a closer geographic.
So
move.
Much closer.
Yeah.
And Boulder is that my show up there is so important to me. I've been running it for almost 7 years now.
Wow.
And that's a lot of my income. And so and I treat it like a comedy club. And so being able to, like, if something happens, I'm like, fine, I'll get a flight 2 hours away.
So what, describe the show. Tell me what you mean by, like, you know, you treat it like a comedy club and you're, I've never done it. So
I've tried to get you up there, but you've always been headlining Comedy Works,
which is
reasonable.
Okay. Well,
it's totally reasonable.
Next time
we'll get you there.
What day of the week is it?
Sundays. And it's two shows on a Sunday.
Yes, that's right. So you do two shows.
Yeah. So I have a 7 and a 9:15. We started, of course, with just the 7. And then, so going to college up there, I knew kind of how this, and I started comedy up there, and I knew how that city worked, and I know how they accept comedy, too.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to mobilize people in Boulder between Tuesday and Saturday, because there's so many other things happening. So really the only options I had was Monday and Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I was working a day job, and I was like, all right, let's do this on Sunday, and then let's do it at 7 so I can get home and be at fucking work at 6 a.m. like I had to, because I was working
sure.
for Apple at the time.
Yep.
And so it started as a thing. I just wanted spots, and then it just kind of – I had just gotten promoted to the almost famous list at Comedy Works, which is kind of like their unpaid internship, if you will. It's like being a door guy at the comedy store.
Yeah.
You get spots, but you don't get paid.
Right.
But you get to get good ones on the weekends and shit like that, too.
Yeah, and you also get to meet people who may bring you out on the road.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took that opportunity. And at this particular time, I was better at comedy. I'd been doing it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was better at it. So I was seeing what was happening at Comedy Works, and I was applying that to Boulder. Comedy Works thrives on, we always put up fantastic shows.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. Here's a great lineup every fucking week.
Yep.
And then the experience of when you get into the room and how you the audience is supposed to act. I enforce that. It's in a beer garden. But it's in the back room. It's in its own space. If you don't want to be there, go up front. No big deal.
Perfect.
And so I started it free. And then we moved to $3. And then we went to $5. And now we're $7.
Okay.
And we started the second show probably 2.5 years ago. maybe 3 years ago now, and we sell out that first show. The only in probably 2 years, the only time I haven't sold out my first show was, I'm not kidding you, this past season of Game of Thrones. It fucking destroyed. I probably lost $3,000.
Wow.
In attendance.
Dude, that's almost kind of like, I can imagine that being like, if you ran that show when Sopranos was on,
bro,
you probably would have had the same issue.
Fucking brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
Wow, man.
So I...
Fucking stupid game. Mm-hmm. Do you know I've never watched one episode?
I've never watched one either.
Yeah, good.
And football doesn't affect me in Boulder. Because if there's any place in Colorado that doesn't give a shit about football...
It's Boulder, it's Colorado.
It's Boulder, Colorado.
That's very true.
Yeah.
It's the Miami Dolphins of fucking... Yeah.
So it fucking... It wrecked me for those 5 weeks or 6 weeks that it was going. And then it picked right back up. And I remember when I started the second show, I called Wendy Curtis, who owns Comedy Works. And I was like, Wendy, I'm thinking about starting this second show. What were you going through when you opened your second club?
Yeah.
And she, the one thing she told me that was super helpful, what that I'll never forget, was you can't rest on the success of the first show or of your first club.
Yeah.
You have to treat this like a totally different thing. And I did, because the audience of my first show is 25 to 50-year-olds. It's a huge spread. It's the staple show. The 9:15 show are 21 to 29-year-old fucking
kids. A little drunker.
Way drunker.
Yep.
And it's expensive there, so it's cheaper for the 9:15 show. So I marketed that one towards the younger crowd.
Yeah.
And I totally treated it differently.
That's smart.
And she helped me a ton with that.
She's an amazing person.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think that's someone who, you know, when I first came in, and I worked with Jay, and then I got to know the staff, and they liked me and stuff, and then...
That's how you get invited back.
I love that staff more than anything in the world. They're the coolest people, and it's I've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast about how there are clubs that do it right, and there are clubs that don't.
Right.
And you could tell a club that's doing it right by a staff that looks you in the eyes, gives you a hug, greets you every year after year, like you just saw each other yesterday.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
DC Improv, Comedy Works, there's a bunch.
Acme.
Yeah.
Hilarities.
The Punchline in San Fran. Yep. I love so much the Heliums. But it's great when you like can run into the Comedy Connection in Providence is kind of like that, like a one-off up there where it's...
Okay.
I've been there forever, so if I see them once a year, twice a year, it's like I'm visiting family.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Wendy was someone who, like the first time I came to Headline... When Tom Green bailed, I think, and I filled in.
Dude, that's how
already
everyone
amazing.
Gets their first start.
Yeah, it was already an amazing, like, sold-out situation, and the shows went great.
Yeah.
And it was something that, like, and she was there and was telling me about, like, plans for the condo, plans for this, and I was like, she's, like, it somehow figured out a way, like, just – organically to like put me at ease.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
That's
it
how
wasn't
good she
like
is.
A job interview.
Right.
It was a conversation with two people and I loved her for
she
that.
She is you wouldn't be in this room next to me if I already didn't trust you. So you've already sold me. You're in. I'm just now a person in the green room hanging out.
It's amazing.
With you.
Yeah, we were talking about the thread of sheets, bed sheets. That was a conversation
she
that we were having.
She cares so much about her comics.
Her attention to detail is just unbelievable.
She started, and I think a lot of that came from, honestly, I think a lot of it came from she started as a door person.
Yeah.
And worked her way up to owning the club and then starting her own club. So I think that's why her staff has those same traits of being a quality staff, looking you in the eye, all those things. Not to mention, she's probably spent $3 million on condos for fucking comedians.
Yeah, it's like, amazing. It's a beautiful situation there.
It's nuts.
So when you decide that you're going to go to L.A., okay, now that's a big move.
Yeah.
And that's something where you're kind of like leaving your comfort zone.
That was tough.
How long before you decided to go did you think about it? Did you go out there? How many times? Like, what was your whole, like, your westward migration
This
plan.
Is a great story. So I probably thought about it for 2 or 3 years before I did it.
Uh-huh.
About like I need to be in the mindset that I'm gonna have to move.
Uh-huh.
And so I had gone to New York. I'd come out here and probably, I'm not joking, maybe 16 times
to New York.
To New York.
Okay. Over how many years?
In my whole career since 2005.
Okay. All right.
And then I maybe 2006, because I remember the first time I came out here, I was a sophomore in college, and that was 05, 06, and I was selling a bunch of weed, and I had a ton of money.
Nice.
And I was like, I came out here with like $1,200. I was like, I'm going to spend it
all. You're the fucking king of New York.
Dude, I was fucking going out, man. And so I came here, I was like, this is the greatest place.
You got off the plane like the Beatles in 1963. And no one's there.
No, yeah, it was. I was like, I'm gonna kill it.
Your money's gone after one cab ride.
Right, right. So I got here and I was like, man, I love it here, and I always wanted to move out here. I looked at transferring colleges. I was like, this is where I want to be.
Okay,
because this is the type of comedy that I like doing.
What does that mean to the listeners?
So the way that New York accepts jokes, it like they don't want you fucking around. They don't want you floundering. They want you to come in there and fucking hit them over the head.
Yep.
And be funny and fast and just, they don't give them a chance to breathe.
Yeah.
And LA is quite the opposite of that from what I found. So, 16 trips out here, one trip to LA. And I was like, this is cool. It's a cool place to live. But ultimately what one decided to move was I had reached the top of Denver. I ran the best show. I headlined the best club on a regular basis. I probably headlined 12, 13 times a year on off nights, but you know, it's a lot for a local dude.
Yeah. And it's hard to be a local and headline a weekend.
Absolutely.
Because at the best, at one of the most sought after clubs, right, if not the on the road.
Right. I would rather,
I mean,
at
when
this
you have
point,
like the Natasha Leggeros and you know, everybody, I mean, everybody.
Bob Saget's but, coming
I mean,
in.
Yeah,
Bill, like
Mike Fenoya.
Mike Fenoya comes in as well. It's crazy how many big stars are coming through.
Oh, what a fucking terrible weekend. But yeah, so you're there. You're like, yeah.
So I was at the top and you know, I didn't, I was comfortable. And Ben Kronberg, who's,
love
you know,
him,
Denver dude, New York guy as well. And he's like, you got to get out of this. You can't be comfortable like this.
Yeah. Comfort is our number one enemy.
It really was. And yeah. I was like, okay. So my friend, Stephen AJ, was like, I'm moving this date. And I was like, okay, let's go.
To New York.
Yeah. To LA.
To LA.
And I go, and I had made one trip out there. And my ultimate decision was a couple things. As much as I love New York, Boulder was so important, is so important to me, and it's so much closer and so much cheaper to get to and from.
That's a 2-hour flight?
2-hour flight, no more than $200 round trip. No more. Most times I'm getting like $80 one-way flights on Southwest. Not garbage either.
Of course.
And
you're not standing on the wing on Spirit Airlines.
On Spirit, right, exactly.
Dude, fuck.
We can get into Spirit later, but that was a big thing. And then also, I love golf. I love cars. And those are two things. And I don't like the shitty weather here. It's brutal.
Yeah. Here during, I mean, I were recording this, what, in mid-September?
Perfect.
This is the...
Oh, I know.
New York here now.
You get 2 months. You get spring and you get like
a month.
Yeah,
we basically get, yeah, like May and September to October.
Yeah.
Is perfect.
Yeah.
And otherwise, like the leaves are changing in the park and
awesome. It's
really beautiful, but it's over soon.
Yeah.
November hits and it's like just we get a week of like freezing rain and then it's just misery.
And then everyone's mad.
Misery. Yeah. The sky is the same color as the buildings. It gets dark at like noon.
It's awful because you can't. The sun can't get through the buildings.
No. This apartment I love because when the sun goes down in the summertime from like 4 o'clock to like 8, 9 o'clock, I'm talking like blazing beams of like fucking natural light come through this place and it's like
awesome.
Actually awesome. But, and it heats the place.
Yeah, that's nice.
But what's like in the winter, it's, I mean, I might as well be living in the fucking closet.
Icebox
in it. So LA, so you go.
So I go there and I knew that I wanted weather and I knew that I wanted golf and cars and stuff like that. And,
you wanted to live the Jay Leno life.
I kind of did.
Yeah.
And one thing that really stuck in my head before I moved was someone told me, I think it was Chris Charpentier, I don't know who it was, but Kyle Kinane said, he goes, New York is just an expensive layover to LA.
Ah.
And I go, interesting. So then I thought about it. I was like, I just spent 10, 12 years in Denver learning how to do comedy.
Sure.
If I hadn't done that, I should have gone to New York.
Yeah,
because I already learned, but I learned how to do comedy.
Of course.
And if I was 3-4 years in, fucking come here, get your teeth kicked in, mm-hmm. go learn how to tell jokes correctly. Yeah. And there are so many shows, not just in the city, but there's like in a 4-hour train ride. Good God, you could have your whole year booked.
I know, there's really a, there's a, yeah, from Jersey, Philly, Boston,
Pennsylvania, upstate New York,
yeah,
I
Connecticut,
mean, you can
now
even
Vermont.
Get Chicago pretty quick.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, it's amazing. It
so
really is, it's awesome.
That is a huge thing to come out, for a reason to come out here if you're a younger comic listening to this, or even like 2, 3, 4 years in, you're not there yet. But I was already headlining. I was already going out with headlining comics. And I was like, okay, I've got the comedy part. I want to go put butts in seats. In my opinion, the fastest way to put butts in seats is TV, internet, and film.
Mm-hmm.
And that industry at the time, and in my judgment at the time, was all in L.A.
Well, yeah.
And there's a lot here, and there's a lot more coming here. I hear there's a bunch of tax credits that just went past. And there's a lot of sound stages getting built in like Brooklyn and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, here in Queens, right near the river, there's a big studio that there's a lot being done there, and there's quite a bit. I mean, all around the East Coast, Connecticut had a tax credit for a while, and a million movies were filmed up there. I remember that's why I think we got A Righteous Kill, which was filmed on this. I was living on the street that De Niro and Pacino were shooting a scene in an apartment.
I thought you said you were living. I thought you were gonna just stop it. I was living on the street, like
I didn't tell you about that. I did a quick 180 degree turnaround real fast. So, dude, it's a bold and scary move because you go now. I was just in LA for a week, and it was my first time out there doing stand up as like the reason why I went out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I've gone there before and kind of like, you know, farted around and hung out and shit, but. With writing for the TV show, with doing shows on the road with the Jokers, and here, years go like fucking
so
this, dude.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, what, you know, like before you know it, it's like,
I
remember my
here.
Audition at the Cellar. It was like, it's been over 3 years now I've been working there. And it's like, Jesus Christ, it feels like yesterday.
Right.
And that's like, but you get in it and you week after week after week, you do your avails, you do your spots, you do the road. It's fall, it's winter, it's spring, you know, and
you don't really
know. Fish does New Year's. And then
right.
it's like,
oh shit, we're resetting again?
Yeah. And it's crazy. So, like, time goes by crazy fast. So, I go to LA and I'm overwhelmed a little bit by the size of it.
Fuck.
It's massive.
Fuck. I mean, New York is massive too, but it's sprawling in LA. That's the issue.
It's sprawling, and also it's something that, like,
and inconvenient.
Yeah, a lot Travel-wise. Of traffic's bananas.
Because the train system, you can't just hop in a train.
No,
not if you have to rent a car.
Yeah, exactly. And here it's. I mean, the trains are always broken, but at least you can like you know you can figure it out. They really are always busted. But like I was weirdly like out in a neighborhood right. Whatever, 3 blocks from the Comedy Store.
Oh, dope. In
and
like West Hollywood.
It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah,
and
it's
I'm like,
unreal. It's
how
paradise.
How do people afford this shit? And then you find out like, oh, yeah, some people live in the valley. Some right. people live here. Some people. So are you like, what's your living situation like out there? Are you on your own? Or you got
roommates? Yeah, so it just got awesome with a big fat asterisk after the word awesome.
Oh, so it's like, is it a temporary thing?
No, but
well, everything's temporary.
So true. So I moved out there, and we first moved into a spot in Los Feliz, whatever you want to say.
You and Steve.
Me and Steve AJ.
Okay.
Yep. And
hilarious comic.
Yes, he's awesome. Yeah. Love the dude. I'll give him a little prop. His album's about to drop on the 25th of this month of September.
Nice.
And he and I, had lived alone forever, and I was like, if there's anyone that I'm gonna live with, it'll be him.
Yeah.
Other than that, I want my own place.
Yeah.
And so we moved out, and it was a good 18 month transition, just to see where I want to be, see what the city's like and all that shit. And then I moved up to Studio City Valley Village in April of this year.
Uh-huh.
Which is the valley.
Yeah.
But it's as close to like Hollywood as
Hollywood.
The valley. It's like the bottom of the valley.
Sure.
And I found, and you're going to get so mad at this. I found an 1,100 square foot one bedroom apartment
1,100 square
so
foot.
So this is probably what, 500, 600 square feet?
Yeah, I don't pay attention.
I mean, it's not. This
I'm
is
joking.
Not, this is big for a New York apartment.
No.
For
this
sure.
is nice. Yeah, this is a steal. But I would imagine what 600 something
probably,
like that.
Yeah,
500, 600. That's all I need.
And mine is so egregiously. It's aggressively big.
More than double the size. It's, of it. Yeah.
And I walk in there and it has parking. Central heat and air, a fireplace, a patio, and a pool.
What?
$1,450.
Get the fuck.
Bro, I'm telling you.
How many ghosts do you share?
Right?
I mean, like, there's got to be something.
Here's the asterisk. My building manager is a fucking psychopath.
Oh, no.
I had to buy a security camera to put in my home just to make sure she's not just coming in, like, unannounced. It's fucking
You're kidding
nuts.
Me.
She blames me for shit that breaks after she tells me it's a 40-year-old apartment.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, great example, garbage disposal didn't work, like when I first moved in. And she goes, well, that's so weird. It worked when we moved you in. And I was like,
things break?
And I was like, yeah, well, I was like, I don't know. Things break. Like, I had to buy my own refrigerator, too.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't even. And she goes, well, what have you been doing to it? And I go, Tamika, I don't even have a fridge. I don't cook. I've been on the road for the first 2 weeks of me living here. I paid you money via mailed money order because I'm not
even
in town.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
And then she goes, she sends a dude in when I'm out of town. I come back. It's still not working. I text her and she goes, her classic, well, that's so weird because I sent a guy in there and he said he fixed it. Why would he say he fixed it if it wasn't fixed? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Just fix it.
Yeah, really.
And then.
It's a refrigerator.
Dude. No, garbage disposal.
Oh, this is the garbage disposal.
Garbage disposal.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she goes, well, you know, if we have to keep going back there, we're going to have to start charging you for it. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then so she sends the guy in while I'm there. He's examining. He's like, oh, there's a hole in the side of this thing. I missed that. I'll replace it. Right.
That's simple.
Right. And so I texted her, and I'm trying to be nice. I was like, hey, thanks again for setting that up. He fixed it. He said, and I put in quotes, there was a hole inside of it. I missed it. And then no fucking response.
No response.
Of course not. Because all she thrives on is drama.
Yeah.
Right? I have a...
Man.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
I have a cat
rough.
There.
Okay.
And...
That I'm more mad about than the...
That's fair. That's totally fair. And he's an emotional support animal just because you kind of have to do that.
You
got to
do it. Yeah, you put in a website.
And that's exactly what I did.
That's what I did with my dog. That's my dog causes the world anxiety. My dog is the opposite of a service dog. I brought my dog to Burlington, Vermont when I was doing Vermont Comedy Club for four nights.
God.
Me and my wife went up there, and that dog ruined Burlington. She was like a 40-pound kite. Like I was like fighting a kite in a tornado. Just holding her like this. She sees another dog and we rescued her and she was apparently one vet looked at her and figured out right away that she was a bait dog fighting dogs. Cause she's got these scars over both ears where like other dogs were probably like clawing at her and she was used to, and the minute you put her on a leash, she goes from being the sweetest dog in the world to fucking like complete like alert mode and like panicky. And
cause
like,
she's stuck.
Cause she thinks that she's probably going to be like, so anytime she goes near another dog, she gets like freaked out. So I brought her to, and every dog in Burlington, Vermont's like, you know, wearing
super chill,
a fucking
hippie,
poncho.
Fucking, right?
And yeah. Like they're like, the dogs are rolling their own cigarettes and shit. And, I went to a store and got her CBD treats.
Oh, did those work?
No, they didn't. I gave her like eight of them. She was off the wall. I ate two of them and I was fucking out. Like, I'm like, so they definitely work, but
this
it wasn't
a psycho.
Yeah. So you have a cat.
So I had a cat and I didn't. And now I knew this place was like, and I found it through Zillow. So I knew it was legit, but
yeah.
I was like, how is this? This is going to get swooped up so fast.
Yeah. And so, you're panicking because you're like, I need this now. I'm
right.
sending you money right away.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I didn't tell her I had a cat, and I very meticulously read the whole word for word, the whole thing. It said no pets. It didn't say animals. It said pets. I was like, he's not a pet. He's an emotional support animal.
Yeah.
Which I will concede.
No, I love you for that.
That is splitting hairs, but
hey,
that's the deal.
Hey, that's the world we're in.
That's the deal. So
there's websites for a reason.
Right, exactly. So she gets mad at me about that. She's like, well, I'm going to have to talk to the owner about this, whatever. And she goes, we might need a pet deposit. And I go, Tamika, I gave you a $1,450 for a deposit, and I have an impeccable rental history.
Yeah.
I think you've got enough.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
You're fine.
Yeah.
So then about a week later, the day I land – in another city, I get a text. This is your 24-hour notice. I'm coming into your apartment tomorrow. That's all she says. And I go, okay, for what? She goes, an inspection.
And does I'm like, she live? Now, let me
she
ask
She lives
you.
Down the hall.
Oh, so it's a building.
She's on premise. But she's not the owner. She is hired by the owner to be the building manager.
The building manager.
So I go, well, can you be a little more specific? And now at this point, I've talked to some neighbors, and all of them are like, oh, she's a psycho. But you have to put up with it because look at what you get for the price.
Sure.
You got, most people have been there for 10, 15, some even 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And so they... he sends me this link of like, here's the Department of fucking Housing reasons why landlords can come in. And I sent it to her and I was like, this isn't an emergency. You don't have my permission to come in. And she's like, it's just going to be a couple minutes. And I'm like, no, you don't have my permission to come in. And then I sent her that link and then she just stopped. I haven't talked. I've seen her, but she's such a cunt that she won't even like, turn around and like say hi. She just slowly walks, just like ominous down the hall. And I'm like, you are the worst.
Well, you know what though? I kind of think that you did the right thing. I mean, you handled it properly. Right. You didn't scream and yell and whatever. No. You said, if the reason why you're coming in my apartment is one of these reasons,
come on in.
Come on in. Yeah. Otherwise, stay out.
Right.
Good for you.
And she could have fucking lied. All she had to do, we got to inspect the fireplace.
Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah, there may be a gas leak.
There's a leak upstairs. We need to make sure.
Dude.
Anything.
In my old apartment in the East Village, it was, I don't know, do you remember the story of that building that exploded in the East Village? I don't know if you ever even heard of it. So on 2nd Avenue and 6th Street, there was an apartment building and the landlord's son, I believe, like had a guy come in and like rig he rigged like another line off the main gas line to like feed an apartment that was not, it was just like a basement apartment. And he just like set it up so it would like gas would go, whatever. The building exploded. A person died in the building. Wow. Like there was a sushi restaurant on the bottom floor and then upstairs were all these apartments. I was driving to Jersey to do shows and all of a sudden my phone's just like going bananas. Other comics here, like, are you guys okay? Like, and I'm like, what the fuck happened?
I'm fine.
I called Jay. I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, a building exploded.
Oh, this is Jay's apartment.
Yeah. He goes, a building exploded. Fucking. And I was like, holy shit, you know? So I ended up like staying in Jersey after, like, it was at Stress Factory and I just stayed there for the weekend or whatever and then came back. That week or two, of course, there's a panic and, you know, everyone's like, there's a gas leak in our building. There's this, there's that. I'm doing a podcast in my apartment. I leave to go get coffee. I walk out into the fucking hallway and it's like a scene from Backdraft.
Oh, shit.
Like there's 19 firemen in my hallway and I'm like, is everything okay? And they're like, might be a gas leak. I don't know. We're not sure. And I came back from going around the corner to get a coffee. Like in 10 minutes, I come back. People are filing out of the apartment.
Wow.
They found like 5 or 6 potential gas leaks like in the bill, in like the piping or whatever.
Jesus.
So we had no cooking gas for about 6 to 8 months. And the way that they Yeah, and the way that they like made up for it was they gave us a hot plate and like a
$50 stipend on energy or something.
It was basically like a 2%, not even, 1.5% discount on our rent.
Oh,
and I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Jesus.
Really? And then they had to fix it. They had to gut it. They had to do a million like fucking different like.
It's gotta be so
but
brutal.
But it was this like, but what like banging on the door? We got to come in your apartment. We got to do this. And it was just this like, all right. But the thing was like, after a while, we kind of talked about it. Like, if someone caught on to this, like they could just walk in to your apartment when Hurricane Katrina or Sandy. Destroyed Sandy when it fucking ripped through here. People were going to houses that were like completely gutted by the water and being like, Con Edison, we need to check your meters. And people were letting them in and the people were just robbing the fucking house.
Holy shit.
So, I mean, like, why are we supposed to let anybody in our apartments?
Wow.
I mean, I don't blame, like, that's the.
Show me your credentials.
You handled it fucking perfect.
Yeah. Well, it's only because I had 2 instances of not handling it perfect.
You
over
freaked
the
out.
Well, yeah, because I'm like,
I don't blame you. Yeah,
I'm like, how have I been renting for 17 years and I've never had conflict
never
like this?
Once. Yeah,
like it's not me.
When someone lives, no, but then you have to be that person where it's like, Is it like, am I handling this right? Am I being like,
I had to talk to my mom about it. She's like, you got to stay cool.
Yeah.
And all the
document
other,
shit.
That's what the tenant said. Is like, don't talk to her on the phone. Yeah. Text everything.
Yeah.
And
so
I have a file in my phone of all the pictures and screenshots. Cause it was not professionally cleaned when I got it. Neither was my neighbors either. Cause she had a dude die in her spot about a week before I moved in, two doors down. And the landlord did not tell her. And at least in LA, you have to. It's not if they ask. You must disclose someone died in this apartment.
Jeez.
If they had died in the hospital, no big deal.
See, I just assume every apartment in New York, someone died.
These cities are so fucking old.
I mean, dude, honestly, like these buildings. Like when I was in the East Village, I was like, 100 people overdosed on heroin in my tub.
Yeah,
I mean, this was like the punk rock scene in the fucking late 70s and 80s was going on right around the block. You think somebody didn't fucking accidentally snort some fucking Ajax or something, dude? There's a million ghosts.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did you, like, reacting and adapting to a new comedy scene is not an easy thing.
Bro.
So how did you do that?
Not well.
Hard, bro.
It's very hard. So first off, I had never moved ever. I had moved from like Colorado Springs to Boulder to go to college, and then from college to Denver, where the comedy scene that I was already a part of.
But
was.
You had your friends,
right?
You
I moved places. To a fucking new city,
yeah.
where I had a handful of friends, but I was not any. I don't have big credits. I was not a name, and it was fucking hard because I go in there like, oh, I headline Comedy Works. I'm gonna be fine.
Yeah. Nope. Back of the line.
Back of the line.
And that's what people don't realize.
No.
You know, it's so funny. I remember there being comics that were like, I'm going to come down to New York and like hang with you and like do some spots with you. And I'm like, who?
You can hang.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
I go, first of all, there are people that are here that are living six people in
living
an apartment.
Living in a closet. They're in a fucking closet.
Doing
for $500 a month.
Doing tours of like...
Oh, Times Square and shit like that, yeah.
Just to be able to maybe eat.
Right.
And go do open mics at, like, the Grizzly Pear or whatever bar show, Bear Burger.
Why am I going to help you? For...
No, and all, yeah, and it's just like, you could try to come down, but don't think I'm going to be, like, there's a million people waiting. And,
right.
and it's this thing of, I really do believe, and you can attest to this, that if you have one or two friends even that are – a little bit more established that believe in you and that give you that, like, you're going to be fine. Like that helps more than anybody can ever understand.
Yeah.
And I try my best to be like very grateful to those people and let them know how much it means.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I think it goes a long way. Cause I don't think, I mean, when you have that moment and someone does help you with that, like, you're going to be good.
Yeah.
And, man, it's not to be overlooked. It's not to be like, oh, thanks, dude, and you move on. It's like it's helped me a bunch out there. And, you know, I eventually started – my problem is if I don't like reach – I don't like asking for shows.
Yeah.
Which you have to in these two cities.
You really do.
And it's – and I also travel a lot, so out of sight, out of mind, which doesn't help either.
Yeah.
So I started two weekly shows in L.A.
Good.
To make sure I always have spots.
Yeah.
At least twice. And like, if you're getting up, this sounds horrifying, but if you're getting up 2-3 times a week in LA, you're doing great. How scary is that? I got 4 shows tonight.
Yeah.
And like, that's like a week's worth of shit out there.
Yeah.
And
how long are you in town for?
I leave on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I did a show. I got here yesterday. I did a Wild Things over at Secret Loft yesterday. And then I got Poco, Comedians You Should Know, and Funhouse tonight. And then I'm going to try and squeeze another one in if I can before Poco.
Well, and, see, what you're saying, all those shows to listeners, that's all.
They're all great shows.
And they're phenomenal shows, and they're shows that have a following, and they're shows that are not happening at comedy clubs.
Right.
This
Which
city
is, weird.
Is amazing yeah. that like when you're able to literally live in two parallel scenes.
Yeah.
It's like being...
Because there's the McDougal Street crowd, and those are like the clubs.
Yeah.
And then there's the Brooklyn club with shows. There's clubs and shows. And
well,
the alt shows are
we're
fun.
We're both sitting here with Grateful Dead shirts on.
Yes, we are.
And I, at night when I can't sleep, because living your dream's a nightmare and I can't sleep, I watch old Jerry Garcia interviews and shit, and I was watching one from like 1981, And he was talking about how if he could play every single night, he would. It wasn't about the success or the fame. It was about just mastering the craft, getting good at the guitar, getting good at playing with other people, inviting other people to come up and whatever. And the thing that I think that's kind of like awesome about that here is that you could take something and like at we have a show, New Joke Night, mm-hmm. where we go up at the cellar and we kind of do like 5 minutes of.
Oh, I've heard of that show. Yeah.
So it's an open mic for the cellar comics that work there, and we're able to go up and literally eat a handful of shit. Every time we go up with notes and we just try premises.
And it's acceptable.
And it's great because the crowd knows that it's whatever. And, you know, if something doesn't work, you go, new jokes. And, that, you know, that's it. And they get it and they love it. But the thing that's great about it is that, like, I could take those jokes, run over to the Lower East Side and hit like, Niagara or go to a bar show or go to there's condo shows that I do here in Queens.
Yeah, I've done a few of those.
Condo complexes. And, so, like, my friend Mike runs a show where
in the loft, right?
In different condo, like these kind of like community, they're super expensive apartments, $5,000-$6,000 a month, sure. One bedroom apartments, right. Where they have Olympic sized pool, whoa. Tennis courts, basketball courts, like a common area in like a movie theater inside their building.
Jesus.
And then we go do comedy in that movie theater.
Gotcha.
But like, and go run and do shit there, right. And like. Run to Gotham and do a set. Run right. to this place. And I like that thing of like, you know, you've got this whole universe inside right. of this city. So it's like our map within I can hit this place on the way from that club to that club.
Yep.
And I can go here. If this train's working, I can get to.
When routing works out, oh, I get a hard on. I'm like, oh, shit, I can go this show to this show to this show. And it's all on the way back home.
And you know what's funny, too, is that like producers and bookers and shit here, even at clubs, they understand like if you're. You know, you text at least right. and be like, you know, polite and go like, hey, I'm going to be like 2 minutes
right.
late.
And a lot of them ask, hey, do you need to get out?
Yeah.
Do you have another show?
Yeah.
Which is fucking great because most of us, it's just it's rare to see a comedian still there at the end of the show.
No.
Like unless it's a 10 o'clock show. Like
also, we just want to go home.
Yeah. Because we've been gone for so fucking long.
It's so fucking good to see you, man. Yeah. I mean, an hour blew by fast.
Are we already at an hour?
We're 55 minutes.
All right. Well,
that's insane.
I feel like this show should be Unfinished Stories with
unfinished
Mike Fenoya.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot to... You and I could talk forever.
We could.
And I'd love to have you back again soon. What's next for you? Like, what's going on? You go from here? Are you sticking around out on the road? Are you going
back
to LA?
So a little bit. I got... I'll be here for this week, and then I'm going next week, the 26th. 6th, 7th, and 8th is High Plains Comedy Festival in Denver.
Nice, dude. So going back home.
Yep. So I'll be there for about a week, and then I do I'll go back to LA and I'll run my shows out there.
What are the names of the shows?
So one is at the Kibitz Room in Cantor's Deli, which is in West Hollywood, and that's every Monday at 8:30. And that one's dope because it is right by the store.
Yeah.
So a lot of big names, you know, drop in there. And then on Sundays, it's the Arroyo Comedy Show at the Arroyo Seco Golf Course in Highland Park.
Wow. Golf course show.
It's pretty cool. Now, it's a par 3 course. So it's not hoity-toity like you think it is.
Bro,
it's
a
so
golf
fun.
Course.
It's so much fun.
There's
though.
No golf course here, so
that's true.
Pretty great.
It's true. And then I do all the holiday roasts at Comedy Works. So I have the roast of Halloween.
Nice.
The 27th, 29th, 30th, and 31st. And then the holiday roast right around Christmas. There's 4 dates. I can't remember.
So you're heading back to Denver quite a bit.
Yeah.
You're there. Now, how often do you get to your show in Boulder?
I go there at least once a month.
Yeah.
To kind
so
of
you,
like
who do you
check
have
in.
Running it now?
A guy named Jeff Tice. Have you met
I
Jeff?
I love him with
he's
all
the best.
My heart.
He's
Jeff's
the best
amazing.
Ever.
He's running the show?
Yeah. So I still run it from Denver.
But he posts
or from LA. I book it and do all that shit. He shows up, sets up the show, hosts it, and then does the door and everything for me.
And
he
I'm
does
gonna,
a lot.
And
for
I'm going to say, if you guys on Instagram want to see some phenomenal artwork, check
oh,
out
Jeff,
Jeff
Tice. Jeff with a G. G-E-O-F. I think it's
Jeffrey Tice.
Jeffrey
Tice.
Online.
He hosted for me this past week when I was out at Comedy Works.
He's great.
And he's
I've become pretty tight friends with him, and I love him. I think
it's amazing what that show does for it, what it did for my comedy skills, what it's done for his comedy skills.
Yeah.
And I truly, truly hope that, because he's getting a lot busier now, so I hope when he has to move on,
yeah,
the next person appreciates
and
it.
And I'm
like
sure
that.
They will.
Yeah.
I mean, so. when it's a legacy situation, it normally. Now, real quick before we go, I want to, like, do you enjoy being out on the road?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I'm a firm believer that if you're living in LA or New York, if you can leave once a month, one weekend a month to go do shows,
yeah,
it is so beneficial for you and your mind and your comedy mind, because one, you reaffirm that you're still funny.
Yeah.
And two, you get out of that 10-minute set mentality. Because yeah, there's a lot of comics in LA that have 60 minutes of jokes, for sure, but they do not have a headlining set.
Right.
And they just don't know how to put it together because they don't have that those reps.
Yeah.
And so I think if you can get out and get at least 30s or 25s,
yep,
on the road,
yep,
once a month, it'll really help your mental state.
Absolutely.
So
totally.
But I did get up at the store a couple times ago, and I fucking loved it.
It's
and
great.
I'm getting.
What room did you do?
I did the main. Oh no, the original room.
The original.
Yeah, yeah.
The original is really cool looking. I did one set at the main room,
dude.
And
that's
it
a big ass venue.
It's
like 450 people.
It was packed.
Yeah,
it was,
it's always packed.
Dude. And you know, it's kind of funny. Like that club reminded me. The similarities between there and the West Village, you know, because the Cellar's got like right around the corner. You got the Village Underground,
yep,
which I think seats like 300 or so.
And you got Flat Black upstairs.
Flat Black's upstairs, which would be the belly room.
Right.
And then you got the
OR, which
the
is
OR,
the Cellar.
Yeah, which is the Cellar. So it's kind of it's neat that there's literally a
right there
a brother sister club.
That's where I have my sights set on. The to wrap up a quick story, like where we were about,
yeah,
like moving out there is I and how I transitioned. It was hard for me to accept that I have to start over and do the 3-minute like potluck sets,
yeah,
and ask everyone for sets. But now I'm damn near 2 years in. I was like, think where you could have been if you went there every free moment you had and hung out.
Yeah.
For 2 fucking years, everyone would know who you are.
Yeah.
So just go.
Go do
just
it.
Hang out.
Just put yourself.
You will know someone there.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. You'll,
yeah,
probably know 10 people there.
Yeah.
And you won't feel alone. You'll be able to have, you know, it's. So.
And you know what else, too? It's just about being, like, a good person and a good hang.
Yeah.
And that shit really does go
a long way.
A long fucking,
right,
way.
Because all we do is hang out.
That's it.
Yeah.
Dude, it's so good to see you.
This is so cool.
I'm happy to see you here in New York. Tell everybody where they can find you,
yeah,
on social media.
I'm super active on Instagram, and that's I am Brent Gill. And then you could, of course, find me on Facebook and stuff, just Brent Gill Comedy. I don't really do Twitter.
Yeah.
You want to follow me there? My last tweet was probably like, I'm going to tweet more, and I haven't.
Yeah.
But find me on Instagram. I put up comedy videos and stuff like that on there, and I just put a lot of time and energy in Instagram, so that's I am Brent Gill.
Fantastic. Dope. You've got a very good famous name. I was thinking about that on your way here. Brent Gill is a great name. Like, it rolls. It's a nice, easy name.
Oh, hell yeah.
It sounds like you could be, you know, whatever, a fucking slide guitar player or a comic. So I think your name's ready to be up in lights.
I like that. I
right
like
on.
That.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Amigos. Follow Brent, and we'll see you on the flip side. Peace.
Adios, amigos.